Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you very, very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to reach out, Jeff, at beekeepingfornewbies.com. It's N-E-W-B-E-E-S.com. Well, today, folks, is going to be episode 181. We're going to make this a in the news segment today. I had a bit of a thing going on respiratory-wise. It's kind of the same thing that happened, if you remember, about, I don't know what it was, 3-4 weeks ago. Got over that and was ready to get back in the saddle. I've had these articles put together for at least, I think close to 2 weeks now. But man, I got hit with that thing again. I don't know what it was, but it was very similar to the time before, same respiratory stuff. And it just knocked me down. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to take a little break, a little pause. Plus, it's the time of year where beekeeping is just not the most active area, subject, topic, unless you're in the Southern Hemisphere. I'm getting a lot of emails and having regular contact with folks down in Australia. So it's good to be able to keep the beekeeping dream alive. But in the Northern Hemisphere, things have shut down. The Discord room is pretty quiet, which, it's par for the course. It kind of happens every year. It's just sad. It's sad to see, like the March, April, May activity and excitement. And then you have this time of year where it's just I don't have the crickets chirping sound. I used to have that on my soundboard, but it's the chirp, 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 that kind of thing. Anyway, today's warm-up song is going to be The Gambler by Kenny Rogers. I was sitting here trying to figure out what made sense to be a good warm-up song, and it popped into my head, and it reminded me of when I was a little boy driving around, and, my dad had this, I don't know what it was, probably a late 60s, early 70s pickup truck. And I remember I rode in the back of that thing everywhere. I guess it was before that time when anybody cared about seatbelts or safety in general. And you just kind of did a lot of weird things. So I remember if the weather was nice, I was in the back of the truck. Dad, can I go in the back? He's like, all right, just don't sit up on the wheel well. He didn't want me sitting up on the wheel well. I had to sit flat, flat in the back of the bed because that's the safe way to do things. And I think back, I'm like, oh, my God, a fender bender could have killed me. But I managed to make it through, and here we are today. So I started thinking of my daddy, and figured it would be a good song to remind me the good old days there. Because whatever album had The Gambler on it, I think we listened to that thing 2.4 million times. It was just always playing while we were going to go out fishing somewhere or go for a ride together. And long time ago. Anyway, I do have a couple of admin notes before I jump in to the discussion today. And we're also going to be finishing up today discussing a Facebook post. So we got four articles and then a Facebook post at the end. It's kind of important. It is beekeeping, very specific to an area of beekeeping that I want to talk about, but we're going to save it for last. The admin notes. I am not affiliated with any government entity at all. As far as me personally goes, I'm very apolitical. I don't align to any political parties. I think they're all relatively equally worthless. So I don't have a dog in any of these fights that are going on right now. I really don't care. I just prefer to be left alone. But as it relates to my ads, any ads that you might see, the way that it goes, in case you don't really understand or aren't aware of how this works, there's two types of ads that I will put out there on the podcast. One of them is you'll hear my voice talking about a product. That is an actual sponsor. That is somebody who I have made an agreement with to advertise their product. If you hear a commercial that is just some other man or woman, human, robot, whatever AI voice, that is not necessarily an entity that I have aligned with in any way, shape, or form. It is just a pool of advertisers who don't want to spend the money to have a host read ad, and it's just generic ads. The reason I'm bringing this up is because I recently, and I worked with Apple. Thank you, Apple, for the, Apple for Creators, I think it's called. It's the area of Apple that deals with, content creators and podcasters. I worked with them to get this removed, but somebody put the title of their review, it was a 1-star review on the podcast, and it said something like, podcast sponsored by ICE. And then in the body, it said, I would never listen to a podcast that's sponsored by ICE or something like that. And then they gave me a 1-star. I'm like, I'm not sponsored by ICE. So the amount of control that I have over what you may or may not hear from an ad is limited to things like, I think I put no adult content and you know, there's a couple of little, very, very broad categories that I'm able to disqualify or make sure that they don't, you know, that they're not a part of it. I don't have a little option checkbox in there that says, like, don't allow government entities to advertise on your podcast. I don't have that granular level of capability. I am not sponsored by ICE, DHS, Social or Secret Service, Social Security, you know, DOD, Department of War, the intelligence community. I'm sponsored by none of them. So please don't give me a one star. If you think that the podcast is garbage, give it a one star and tell us why. But if you don't, please don't, like, do that kind of stuff, because I don't care about ICE. I don't care about DHS. I don't care about all of it. Just please leave me alone with that. Okay, so moving forward, we did not, as you probably noticed, have a Thanksgiving message this year. Now, my oldest daughter hasn't really participated on the podcast, but we know that Phoebe, the Phoebe Keeper, as well as my other daughter, Elizabeth, have both, you know, been on from time to time, mostly Phoebe, but last year we had our little Thanksgiving message. We were all here at the house and we just jumped in and chatted for a little bit. So Elizabeth is now married. For those of you who are keeping track at home there, she's now married. Phoebe's working and she's in college and she's got a lot of stuff going on. So we had Phoebe here this year, but she was at work for Thanksgiving. I actually had the chance to go to have a nice Thanksgiving with some local folks. Nice Navy family, had a really good time, but we didn't get everybody together. Elizabeth was with her newly married family, and so we didn't have a special Thanksgiving message. But I hope all of you had a great Thanksgiving, and I don't know that you're even going to hear from me again before Christmas. I'm not sure what we're going to be doing leading up to Christmas here. So I just wanted to kind of let you know why you didn't hear from us on Thanksgiving. It's not, you know, we do still love you, and we still wanted to wish you a happy Thanksgiving, but just didn't have everybody here, so figured we'd push this year. Okay, and as always, the links to all of these articles are going to be down in the description, both whatever is syndicated to YouTube as well as what is just on the podcast by itself. All these will be in the description, so you can go read the full articles if you'd like. The first one is coming to us out of Australia. The horned devil bee found in remote goldfields prompts call for further research. When Kit Prendergast visited the remote Bremer Range in Western Australia's goldfields, she knew she found somewhere special. It was so biodiverse, I've never seen so many insects, not just native bees, but wasps and flies, she said. It was incredible. The native bee scientist was surveying pollinators of a critically endangered wildflower called Marianthus aquilinaris, which only grows in the Bremer Range, more than 600 kilometers east of Perth. It was while surveying this flower she noticed one of its pollinating visitors was a little unusual looking. When I saw this one, I knew it was quite distinctive because it had these devil-like horns, Dr. Prendergast said. There are some other bees that have horn-like structures. None of them were like this. It was really exciting. So there's an image of this bee, and it looks just like that. It's got these two little horns on the front up near its head. It's pretty wild looking. Dr. Prendergast decided to name her new discovery Megachile hacaripis, Lucifer, after her favorite Netflix character. I was watching the Netflix show Lucifer at the time, and the name just fit perfectly, she said. Anyway, so there's some more about the article. I just thought it was kind of neat. You know, they were talking about this whole region, the Bremer Range in the Shire of Dundas, and it talks about, you know, where it is geographically, how it is the largest temperate woodland on Earth. Lots of things that I didn't know about that area at all. As well as just the amount of biodiversity and the number of things that are alive and thriving in that area. And then, of course, there's also a discussion about some potential mining that they're trying to do in that area and how they're trying to stop that. But kind of a cool article worth checking out. All right, moving on to the next one. So for those of you who love small hive beetles, you're going to enjoy this here. Circular economics. Honeybee pest turns excess pollen into food. Several species of insects, including yellow mealworms and house crickets, are raised as sources of animal and even human food. This can be done in a so-called circular economic process. In addition to producing usable products and feed, insects also reduce biowaste from other agricultural or commercial processes. Meanwhile, the European honeybee, Apis mellifera, is no stranger to insect pests. One significant pest of bees is a small hive beetle, a sub-Saharan native that now lives all over the globe. It's known for damaging honeybee colonies when its larvae consume bee pollen, honey, and brood, leaving the remaining honey fermented and unusable by both bee and human. However, the way the small hive beetle consumes honey could be key to not only providing nutrition and fertilizer, but also to maintaining the health of honeybee hives. Stephen Cook, PhD, research entomologist at the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Bee Research Laboratory in Beltsville, Maryland, and his colleagues found that small hive beetle larvae could be reared on excess stored pollen from honeybee colonies, converting the food source to feed and fertilizer while keeping the excess fermented pollen from harming the beehive. Their research was published in September in the Journal of Economic Entomology. Now, the article continues on and it talks about the high reproductive rates of hive beetles and how they use different food sources and what they do with them, and talking about how unused pollen can sometimes, you know, attract other things, or, you know, like the hive beetle, and talking about how obviously you want the pollen ideally is stored as bee bread, but sometimes it can get a little funky and gross, potentially even get some mold in there depending on the conditions. So having some of this surplus is kind of where the article goes into being able to do this. But using honeybee colonies at the USDA facility in Maryland, Cook's team fed the hive beetle larvae excess pollen stored in beeswax comb frames. The team collected adults from the colonies, grouped them according to their sex. They first examined bioconversion from excess pollen by the beetles, placing 3 male and 3 female adults in mating chambers. The team weighed the first larvae. 10 days later, they weighed the larvae in their wandering phase, and then they collected the accumulated frass. The researchers also analyzed larvae and frass for chemical and nutritional content. So the article continues on with a few more of the details on what they collected and what comprises, you know, what each of these components are comprised of and some of the byproduct. But essentially what it shows is a 27% feed conversion efficiency, which is equal or higher than conversion efficiencies of other edible insect species. Given enough small hive beetle larvae, much of the waste pollen collected by honeybees could be converted into frass, Cook says. The larvae themselves contain 25% protein, 25% fatty acid, and low carbohydrates and sugar content. So if you're on the carnivore diet, this might be a good thing for you to check out. The beetle larvae's frass had the highest known... That was not in the article. The beetle larvae frass had the highest known nitrogen content of any edible insect. It was surprising that the beetle frass was very high in nitrogen, Cook says. Anyway, kind of an interesting article, and it works really well, you know, with a lot of the push to kind of replace human food with crickets and things like that. So this is, you know, another awesome thing we can leverage for that. Okay, bees can tell time. New study reveals shockingly advanced insect intelligence. When you think of time perception, bees aren't the first creatures that come to mind. Yet a new study suggests these tiny insects may have a surprisingly sophisticated sense of timing that could rival the temporal awareness of mammals and birds. In research published in Biology Letters, scientists from Queen Mary University of London and Nanyang Technological University found that bumblebees can distinguish between flashes of light that last mere fractions of a second. The discovery hints that even insect brains, though tiny, can process the passage of time in ways far more flexible than previously understood. Our research shows that bumblebees can learn to discriminate between visual stimuli and different durations presented as flashing lights to guide their foraging choices, the researchers write. Time perception plays a crucial role in survival. It helps animals decide when to forage, hunt, or communicate with others. Circadian rhythms, which govern day-night cycles, are well known. However, scientists know far less about how insects perceive shorter intervals. These are the seconds or fractions of seconds that matter when avoiding predators or coordinating movement. To explore this, lead author and PhD candidate at Queen Mary University, Alexander Davidson, and his colleagues designed a free foraging experiment where bees were trained to associate flashes of light with a sweet reward. The researchers tested whether bees could distinguish between short and long durations, such as half second versus 2.5 seconds. They also tested this when both lights flashed the same total amount over time, removing brightness as a cue. The results reveal that the bees consistently learned to discriminate between the two, regardless of whether the short or long light was rewarded. Since bees don't encounter flashing stimuli in their natural environment, it's remarkable that they could succeed at this task, Davidson said in his press release. The fact that they could track the duration of visual stimuli might suggest an extension of time processing capacity that has evolved for different purposes, such as keeping track of movement in space or communication. The team tested 41 bumblebees across two main experiments. The insects were housed in temperature-controlled wooden nest boxes connected to transport chambers. The bees had free access to the observation chamber, while access to the experimental chamber was controlled through clear acrylic tunnels with removable doors. In the test chamber, bees faced two circles of yellow light, one flashing for a longer period and the other for a shorter burst. When a bee correctly chose the duration linked to a sugar reward, it was allowed to feed. Choosing the wrong one meant tasting a bitter quinine solution instead. Once the bees reached a success rate of at least 15 correct choices out of 20, the rewards were removed to test whether they had truly learned the pattern. Even without sugar, most bees continued to pick the correct flash duration. Bees learned to discriminate between the stimuli both when the short and when the long stimulus was removed, showing that they were not driven by spontaneous preferences and phototaxis, the researchers write. This rules out the possibility that bees were simply attracted to one type of light over another. Interestingly, location mattered slightly. Bees performed slightly worse in the chamber farthest from the nest, a small effect that the authors suggest may be related to distance. Still, the timing itself held firm. Anyway, it continues a little bit more on there, but I thought that was kind of a fascinating thing. I don't know, it's one of those things where I think that a lot of this research is kind of cool, and I think it's neat to be able to understand more about these insects and things. I still always wonder, though, like, how much money does that cost? Like, how much of a grant did a government entity have to provide to say, hey, here's $400,000 to discover how bees respond to light? Like, or, oh, okay, well, we determined that a bee can tell time. Okay, cool. So do we spend $500,000 to determine it? Like, what is the outcome? Where are we trying to get to with that? Once we discover this, what does it bring to the table? How do you get the ROI on that? Because I think if I'm a taxpayer, and of course we obviously know as taxpayers that billions of dollars are being wasted, billions of dollars are being given away to other countries all the time. Like, how do we find a way to spend it like it's ours? Because while I think the research is cool and it's neat, and I would love to be able to hang out and, you know, do this kind of research for fun and get paid to do it, like, that's pretty cool. But I also feel like there's a whole lot of people going to work every day to generate the money that goes to figuring out whether or not bees can tell time. Anyway, it's officially holiday crunch time, but Uncommon Goods makes it easy to find thoughtful, truly original gifts without the last-minute stress. Skip the boring stuff this year and discover something memorable, meaningful, and actually fun to give. I had no idea whiskey making was even a DIY thing, but today I found a whiskey making kit on their site. It comes with different wood chips and botanicals, orange peel, cinnamon, cocoa beans, even coffee beans, so you can create your own custom flavor blend. Such a cool gift for anyone who likes to experiment or try something new. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, making every gift feel thoughtful and one of a kind. They really do have something for everyone, and your purchase helps support the people behind these creative ideas. Plus, Uncommon Goods gives back $1 for every order to a nonprofit partner of your choice, with more than 3.1 million donated so far. So don't wait. Shop now and get ahead of the rush and actually enjoy the season. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/honey. That's uncommongoods.com/honey for 15% off. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Support for this podcast is brought to you by Walden University. Ever catch yourself thinking, what if I could go after what I actually want and really make a difference? You're not alone, and that's exactly why I want to tell you about Walden University. For over 50 years, Walden has helped working adults like you get the W, with the knowledge and skills to build the future you want and make a difference where it matters most. If you've been waiting for the right moment, this is it. Head to waldenu.edu and take that first step. Walden University, set a course for change, certified to operate by Chev.
I think this might be the best article coming up here last. Vaccine for honeybees successfully completes efficacy trials. The study results place the American foulbrood prevention therapy closer to full USDA licensure. A vaccine conditionally approved by the USDA for protecting honeybees against American foulbrood has demonstrated efficacy in clinical trials. Based on the results of 2025 studies, the American foulbrood vaccine from Dalen Animal Health is now closer to receiving full licensure from the federal agency's Center for Veterinary Biologics, according to the biotech company. These successful efficacy trials represent a major regulatory milestone for Dalen and the beekeeping industry. Annette Kleiser, PhD, the company's CEO and founder, said in a news release, "This past summer, we performed efficacy trials similar to those we conduct for our annual conditional license. The results were excellent. We still have work to do before we can apply for full licensure, but this is a significant step forward in our regulatory journey. The AFB vaccine contains killed whole cell P. larvae bacteria. It's administered by mixing the vaccine into queen feed that is consumed by worker bees. The vaccine is incorporated into the royal jelly by the worker bees, who then feed it to the queen. After the queen ingests this royal jelly, fragments of the vaccine are deposited in her ovaries. having been exposed to the vaccine, the developing larvae have immunity as they hatch. Really crazy. Now that's pretty cool. Like that's something that I feel like is a good use of money to figure that out. And I think that we can all agree that as disruptive as American foul brood is, if it hits your apiary, it's a really big problem. I've only had to contend with it a couple of times, so it's not a real prominent issue, but it is nice to have an option getting ahead of things. So, you know, you have your bee colonies, you give the vaccine, and then you're hoping to not get foul brood. I still think once you get foul brood, you're still burning everything down. But if this can prevent it, that could be a really great approach, and definitely worth something considering if they can, you know, price it competitively. But it looks like if everything continues on, you know, on schedule, and they're still continuing to have the level of efficacy they're hoping for, they could receive full licensure as early as 2027, which would then allow the vaccine to be distributed more broadly to commercial beekeepers and enhance the opportunity for it to become a standard tool in an IPM strategy and program. Like I said, there's a lot more here if you want to continue reading all the details, but I think it's pretty cool. They do have some references on here inside the links that you can go and read more details. Okay, I want to get to the last item of the day, and this is a Facebook post. It was, I think it was a short, actually. It wasn't a post. It was just a YouTube short, or I'm sorry, a Facebook short. I don't even know how I came across it because somebody, I do get links from people periodically where it's like, oh, you know, check this thing out. There was something on Facebook, so I clicked, you know, the link and went to Facebook. I read whatever it was that somebody had sent me. And on that same page, I saw this short. And I'm going to read for you the words that came up because it was a video and it had bees in the video that corresponded to what I'm going to read to you. And it basically says, honey isn't harmless. Don't buy it. Buying honey supports these violent acts. Beekeepers remorselessly force male bees to ejaculate and then toss them aside to die. Beekeepers don't care about consent. They restrain and splay open queens to forcibly inseminate them. This breeding practice is cruel. No one should be treated like this. Okay, so as you can probably figure from what I've just read here, what they're doing is they're showing a video that has parts and pieces of artificial insemination of queen honeybees. But the words that are used here is beekeepers remorselessly force. Beekeepers don't care about consent. Basically, what this video is doing is it is making the implication that every beekeeper out there in the world uses this practice to breed honeybees, to breed new queens. And I think that it's really, really frustrating because we have a situation where they don't explain any way that drones die after mating. Like that just happens, whether you're doing it artificially to, you know, to do artificial insemination or whether it's happening naturally in the wild, no matter what, that drone is going to die. But it says here, and then toss them aside to die. Well, that's what they do. Like, that's just the way it is. Like, it's not, you know, it's not a big secret here. But then on top of that, they make it sound like literally every beekeeper does this. And we're talking like a fraction of a fraction of a fraction. Like, most beekeepers will have an entire beekeeping career as a hobbyist or even a sideliner, like, not doing this. Like, artificial insemination of queen bees is just not something that everyday beekeepers do. If you are a queen breeder, sure, yeah, you're going to do this. If you are in the business of rearing queens, if you have a very specific type of genetics that you are trying to sell to other people and you're like, this is exactly what you are getting, you can't guarantee that with wild mating. You know, if you send a queen that has the best genetics in the world and she goes out into the wild and mates with 30 different drones, there are no guarantees about what you're going to get. So this is how you control that. And we're doing this really for the greater good of the bee community. Let's just use VSH, the Varroa sensitive hygiene trait. If we are able to breed for Varroa sensitivity, and you now have bees that can, you know, work young workers who can say, hey, wait a minute, there's Varroa developing inside this cell, and they can yank that developing pupae out and toss them out of the hive, and now the Varroa is gone, That's amazing, right? That's a really great trait to have. If we can breed for that, think of what we can do for the beekeeping community and the overall health of honeybees globally. Like, think of how great that would be. So is it a little bit of discomfort that they're going to go through with this? Probably, but the queen's not dying. Like, she continues on. They don't talk anything in here at all about how they're sedated or what's done about anything else. But, I mean, what do you want to do? You know, and I think the biggest issue that I have with this is the whole thing is misleading, and it makes it look like every beekeeper is bad and this is the way that everything is done all the time. And even most of your commercial providers aren't doing this. They don't get into the specialty of artificial insemination of queens. They buy their queens from reputable breeders if they're trying to bring in new genetics. Most of them have already figured out the genetics they like, and they're just working with what they have, occasionally bringing new things in when they want to try to bring in a new, again, like a VSH type of thing. But anyway, I wanted to mention that to you guys. I thought that it was kind of an obnoxious, and I don't really think there's anything that you do about this. It's just, it was frustrating, and I wanted to share it with you, and maybe you guys have seen it too. Well, I think that's all that I've got for you today. I don't have any episodes planned right now for the rest of the year. That being said, if all of a sudden we get, you know, an influx of questions and we get a lot of activity around anything that happens, or there's something that is really, really newsworthy and we need to talk about it, outside of that, I don't think we're going to do anything. I might come on once here right before Christmas and just do a little Christmas message with some kind of fun things going on. But, you know, outside of that, I think that we're pretty much wrapping things up for the year. I know that we do tend to see a ramp up in the Discord room in like that January, February timeframe. A lot of people are getting ready to start shopping for Christmas. If you do check out the Discord room, we have a shopping list area on there that has a full list of a whole lot of different things that that are pretty good to kind of get you started if you're not sure exactly what things to get as it relates to some of your gear and some of the other items that you're going to use on a daily basis. But this should wrap up this little In the News segment. Just a couple of quick articles there I thought were kind of cool. So take care. Be kind to one another. Remember that I love you. There's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.